start? Yeah, so so yesterday the very last statement was that every defiable function from R to R is piecewise CR once we pick R. It was just for functions from R to R. And, well, very basic properties of differential functions over reals hold in any omnivore structure. It's very easy to prove mean value theorem. The same proof as in real case works here. And also, if function is constant on open interval, if derivative of function is zero everywhere on interval, function should be constant. It follows from mean value theorem. It gives us plenty of differential functions from R to R. Next step is to develop differential calculus for functions from Rm to Rn, or for maps, for definable maps. But it's actually very, very easy, because we are not going to use classical definition, namely a map from Rm to Rn, where R is the reals, is differentiable at some point if it can be approximated very nicely by a linear map. Standard definition of the reals, we are not going to define this way. We are going to cheat slightly. We pick a equivalent property of functions over the reals and make out of this property definition for omnivore expansions of real closed fields. So let's say we have definable set in Rn and a definable map from this set U into Rk. And we say that this map is CR map, where R is some integer, is defined by induction, if all partial derivatives are CR minus 1 functions on U. This is our definition. For example, function is C1 on U if all partial derivatives exist on U and they are continuous on U. This definition of C1 map C2 by induction. And it's actually not a hard exercise to show that over reals, this equivalent to usual CR definition. Namely, you have very nice approximation by linear maps, and then this map that gives you, well, linear map, a nice metric, is continuous for C1. So you take this one as a definition. And the very first one, once you have plenty of functions from R to R, which are CR, it's not so hard to show that if you take any definable open set and any, actually, just definable map, there's no need for continuity from U to Rk, then for every integer R, you can pick a large definable Vr in U. Large means set of smaller codimension, where F is Cr on this set. We can do it just because we can do it for all partial derivatives of F. For example, suppose we are in R2, we have our open set U, and we have function F, let's say from U to R. Because we can do it for each coordinate separately, take intersections of this nice set Vr. So I want to show, for example, that partial derivatives of F exist almost everywhere on U, on a set of smaller codimension. So claim is, let's say, df by dx1 exists almost everywhere. Everywhere means everywhere outside of set of smaller dimension. Dimension at most one. Because if not, this set is definable. Sets where partial derivatives exist. It's a definable set. If it's not large, if it has, if codimension is big, we can find some open set, call it B, where no df dx1 exists. But then pick any point B
So you have interval.
And then function x goes to f of x. B is not differentiable
anywhere on this interval.
It's impossible by 5.3. It must be differentiable almost everywhere. The derivative exists almost everywhere. The same is true for second derivative almost everywhere. Every definable function is almost everywhere continuous. The partial derivatives are almost everywhere continuous. Take intersection of all these sets, you get VR. So there's no big deal to show from 5.3 to go to maps from UN, from RN to RK. So all our maps are almost everywhere differentiable. And now we can define more or less differential of such map. Take U definable set, F. Okay, this is something strange. So F from U to RK, definable C1 map. Take point NU and consider matrix of partial derivatives computed at this point A. This matrix is called, well, the same as over the reals, Jacobian matrix of F and denoted by Jacobian of F at A computed. Once we have this matrix, Jacobian matrix, we can construct linear map. X goes to X times Jacobian. It's a linear map from Rn to Rk. And this map is called differential of F at A. And it's not hard to show that this linear map differential is actually the best possible linear approximation of F at A. That's going to be, I think, part of the project. So once we have all our functions are nice, almost everywhere differentiable, it's not very hard to develop very basic calculus, differential calculus of such function. So first, we can show inverse function theorem, or mapping theorem, for definable functions. So we have definable open set in Rn, and function f from U to Rn. Definable and CR for some R. R should be at least one. It assumes differential of f is invertible at some point at A. Then locally near A, function f is invertible. The inverse exists. And this actually inverse is also the same class as function f. So proof of this theorem is actually a project that I assigned to students. They should be presented on Friday, how to prove the inverse function theorem. So differential is invertible, function is also invertible, and the inverse is going to be CR. And as usual, from inverse function theorem, we get implicit function theorem. So what is implicit function theorem? It says that in many cases, we can solve smoothly equations fxy equals zero. So what we have x is going to be some running over tuples in Rk, y over tuples in Rn. And we have n equations. Where y is also n tuple. In most cases, almost for almost all nice functions, in sufficiently general case, this equation will have a unique solution. For example, equation x bar minus matrix A times y equals zero. If A is an invertible matrix, then this equation has a unique solution for y. So the same is implicit function theorem. If the Jacobian of F relative to Y is invertible, like matrix A is invertible, then actually we can solve for Y is a function of X, can be expressed, as this function phi is of the same class of smoothness as original function f. It's a very simple application of inverse function theorem, just applying inverse function theorem to appropriate function. Actually, they are follow inverse function also follows some implicit function. Depends how you, which one you prove first. So now we have chain rule can be proved almost automatically, follow the definition, etc., etc., etc. So almost all theorems of usual calculus work for definable functions. You just need to put definable everywhere. So now, once you have sufficiently many smooth functions, we can actually do smooth cell decomposition. But first we need to define what does it mean for function to be CR map on some subset of Rn, which is not open in Rn. For example, curve in R2. We have function from A to Rm. We say function is CR on this set. If it can be extended to some open neighborhood of A inside Rn, to a definable CR map. To be CR on some subset of Rn means it is a restriction of CR function on some open set of Rn. This is the definition. And now we can define a notion of CR cell doing the same definition but requiring that all functions we use are CR maps or CR functions. Such cells are called CR cells. And smooth cell decomposition says the same as usual cell decomposition, only we add CR function everywhere, CR cell. So given definable subsets in Rn, there is a CR cell decomposition of Rn, so by decomposition to smooth cells, compatible with each AI. So each AI is a union of cells in the decomposition. For every definable function from A to R, we can also find CR cell decomposition so that restriction of F into each cell is CR for each A. If we define notion of CR submanifold of Rn, definable CR submanifold, in any reasonable way, for example, locally it looks like the graph of CR function, it's not hard to see that all our cells are actually CR submanifolds. So this smooth cell decomposition also gives that every definable set can be partitioned into finitely many CR definable manifolds automatically. So if you work over the rails, we get usual notion of CR manifold. And then each function is going to be CR on each such manifold. So to prove smooth cell decomposition, once we have enough, once we have usual cell decomposition, it's not very hard. We just need to show that we have sufficiently many CR map in the sense of definition 5.8. And here's the claim 5.11. Take any K cell in Rn. Take any definable function into R. Pick any integer R in advance. Then we can find large definable subset C prime in C. Large means smaller codimension. It contains almost all points of C. Such that F on this C prime is of the class CR. And then doing by induction, now imply the same claim to the difference. You have a set of smaller dimension. You can always split C into finitely many definable subsets where F is CR on each subset. And actually applying this kind of argument, you can get certifications, etc., etc. So proof 5.11 is actually very simple because we know it is true if C is an open cell in Rn. For open sets, every function is almost everywhere CR. So let's prove 5.11. So we have our cell, C, sitting inside Rn, and we have function f from C to R. This K cell means we can find projection on some open set U in R K. Okay, U looks like union V in R K, so that pi on C is the homeomorphism between C and V. So it follows from definition of cell. So you can also find half inverse map. See, this homeomorphism from between V and C is inside Rn. And now we can take composition of phi and f and get map g. So the diagram is commutative. Now v is open inside Rk. G is going to be Cr on some large v prime in v. This large v prime in v. Meaning dimension of V minus V prime is less than dimension of V equals K. So that G is CR on V prime. And now take C prime to be C of V prime. Just preimage in C of C prime. And then open neighborhood where F can be extended to CR function in Rn, we can take U to be preimage of V prime. And function F is just composition of projection compose. This way, we can extend any function to a large set where function is CR. And then the rest is just technicalities to get CR cell decomposition. So we finished. Questions? Yeah.
Yeah. In this way, you, kind of, you get the simplification because it's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's much easier to prove a Verdier certification than Whitney. Because Whitney condition is discrete. It's not definable condition, right? It's existence of sequences. Verdier certification condition is actually definable. It's about like a Lipschitz style condition on tangent spaces.
And this implies some triviality.
So, triviality I'm going to do next, but not smooth triviality. But because everything's piecewise smooth, you can achieve some smooth triviality also. But so for usual certifications, it's not hard to do, well, not hard, not very, it doesn't take much time to do Verdier certification. And Verdier implies Whitney conditions. Okay. Yeah, so next goal is to do some trivializations. But to do trivialization, we need, it goes through definable triangulation. There is just, well, almost no difference from classical triangulation, but I will just go through definition and refer to most classical case. So D points in Rn are affine independent. Well, if you choose A0 as the origin, and look at these vectors, then they are linearly independent. Standard notion of affine independent points, d plus 1 points. And having this d plus 1 points in Rn, A0, AD, by, well, you know, A0, AD in parentheses, we denote this set. So it's just, well, it's simplex, standard simplex. Since it's just I will refer to classical algebraic topology. So difference is, When we are going to look at complexes, we'll have deal with open simplexes. For us, triangulation is going to be some it's homeomorphism to a polyhedra, where a polyhedra is going to be a union of open simplexes. Because we don't have deal with a compact object or closed object. The goal is to show that every definable set is definably homeomorphic to a polyhedra. And polyhedron is union of open simplexes. So we have it standard simplexes. So for 2 points, you take A0, A1, then our A0, A1 is just open segment connected A0, A1. For 3 points, our A0, A1, A2 is going to be open part, interior of this triangle, with the vertices A0, A1, A2, etc., etc., etc. And if A0, to get triangle, we need that A0, A1, and A2 are not on the same straight line. That's why we need, usually we use, so we use affine independent vectors. It's very easy exercise. If vectors are affine independent, this so-called D simplex has dimension D. So this object is called D simplex, spanned by vertices A0, AD. The closure, usual topological closure, is denoted by brackets. I don't think I'm going to use it anywhere. And so our points are called vertices. A face of a simplex A0, AD is any simplex spanned by any subset of vertices. So in this case, A0, A1 is a face of our simplex. A1, A2 is a face. 1 point A0 is also a face. A2, A1, etc., etc. And then going to higher dimension, we get just simplicial objects, and faces are usual faces. Now, complex is a finite collection of simplexes, satisfying just a condition, complex, that either two closures of two simplexes in K are disjoint, or their closure equals to some closure of a common face. But this common face doesn't have to be in our complex K. For example, if you take one open triangle, so, let's take square without diagonal. It's very easy to get simplicial complex. Get one simplex, second simplex, one more, one more, one more, one more, and vertices. And it's going to be a simplicial complex. But if you shift one of the simplexes, like this object, it's not going to be simplicial complex, because intersections of the closures of these two simplexes is not common face. It is subset of two faces. So condition that intersections of closures must be closure of some face means you don't have this shift. This intersection must be subface. Okay? So point is, complex is just finite object. It's finite collection of some simplexes. So right now, it doesn't have any geometric interpretation. Just finite collection of simplexes. And then geometric realization of a complex is polyhedron spanned by complex. We just take union of all simplexes that are in K, denoted by K in vertical brackets. And then vertices is a set of all vertices of simplexes in K. So triangulation theorem is, given any finite collection of definable sets in Rn, there is a complex somewhere in Rn also, and the homeomorphism phi from Rn to polyhedron spanned by K, so that each SI is actually union of simplexes in K. So image of each SI is subcomplex in K. And we can do it for any collection of definable sets. So we have definable triangulation for sets. We don't know if we have definable triangulation for maps in general. So each, what is nice about it, each polyhedron is very combinatorial finite data. So to each set, we can assign combinatorial finite data that somehow presents its a homeomorphism type. And we can do it even better. We can look at just standard complexes. So standard complex, Kn, for n is natural numbers, is complex consisting of all simplices that span by unit standard basis vectors. So it's complete polyhedron means we take all simplices spanned by these guys. It's called Kn. And it's not hard to see that that every polyhedron is definably homeomorphic to a union of faces of such standard polyhedron Kn. So claim is for any definable set, we can find natural number n and some complex k with Kn, so that A is definably homeomorphic to polyhedron spanned by K, union of faces of Kn. Just because, well, we know by triangulation A is definably homeomorphic to some polyhedron L, all we need to do to show that L is definably homeomorphic to a union of faces of Kn for some n. And this is just a semi-linear game. Take all vertices in V, and now take n, exactly the number of vertices. Map each Vi to Ei. Once you have two polyhedrons, and you map vertices, there's a unique way to extend it to actually map between polyhedrons, from polyhedron to polyhedron, by linearity. And this map is actually going to be homeomorphism. So it means every definable set is going to be definably homeomorphic to a union of faces of some Kn. There are only countably many such Kn's. Each Kn has only finitely many subcomplexes. It means in any O-minimal structure, we have only countably many homeomorphism types, definable homeomorphisms. There are only countably many complex polyhedrons up to homeomorphism. And usually in model theory, once we have countable, then in many cases actually have finite because of a compactness theorem. From the point of view of model theory, there's nothing special about to be countable. That's exactly theorem 516. Suppose we have uniformly definable family of subsets of Rn, Sa. So we have a family, definable. Then, actually, there is natural number n, and a partial definable map. Partial means it's defined everywhere on Rk, Rn, but only on our family. So for each A, this map is homeomorphism from Sa onto a union of faces of Kn. Point is, if we have uniformly definable family, there's one n that works for any Sa. Each Sa is going to be homeomorphic to union of faces of Kn. Because n is fixed, Kn has only finitely many subcomplexes. So in this family, we have only finitely many homeomorphism types. And even more, between two homeomorphic objects, we can find uniformly in parameters a homeomorphism. This FA gives a homeomorphism from each SA to a subcomplex. So uniformly in parameters, we can find such homeomorphisms. Proof, well, compactness theorem. We construct a huge type. Sigma of X is going to be type. So we're trying to describe a parameter, A, so that FA is not homeomorphic to any finite union of faces of simplices, complexes like Kn. This is our type. So, so our type says, okay, we are trying, looking for parameter in our family, X in RK. So that, and now we go through all KNs, it is a union. And for each N, we want to write this SX is not homeomorphic to a union of faces of KN when N is fixed. But again, to be definably homeomorphic, we need to go through all formulas. So next part is collection, so it running through all L formulas, and what's written here can be expressed by first order sentence, saying phi at u v z, this parameter. So there is no z such as phi u v z defines the graph of homeomorphism from Sx onto union of faces of Kn. Because n is fixed, it can be written as a first order formula. You have only finitely many union of faces, so just run this finite family. It's a finite disjunction. And this is our type. It's a huge union over all integer numbers and over all formulas. So type says there is no homeomorphism. This type is inconsistent. If it's consistent, it will have realization in some elementary extension of our field. And in this elementary extension, which is also or minimal, we have previous theorem. Every definable set is definably homeomorphic to one of standard, to the union of faces of some standard polyhedron Kn. So it is inconsistent, meaning some finite subset is inconsistent. But finite subset will have only finitely many n's involved and finitely many formulas involved. So we can divide our base space into AIs. For each AI, we'll have this Ni, and some formula Phi gives us definable homeomorphism. Or we, for some parameter BA. It's not hard to put everything together. Take maximum N, build huge complex, KN, and then putting together all this. Phi, so we get only one phi. It means for each A, there is a parameter BA, so the phi UV gives a homeomorphism from SA onto union of faces of KN. We need slightly more. If we can replace BA by actually function of A. For each A, there is such BA. By definable choice, we can actually pick BA definably. We can find, we replace BA by some definable function GA. And then we have this map. So there are only finitely many homeomorphism types, and actually you can pick homeomorphisms definably with respect to parameters for uniformly definable sets. So this is trivialization theorem. And because everything is piecewise CR, you can improve looking at some CR things in this case. But it's trivialization. Not trivialization, it's just finitely many homeomorphism types. But you would like to do it even better. It's called trivialization. Suppose we have we have definable map from definable set S to A. So we consider this definable map as a family of vibrations of S. We are looking at the fibers parameterized by the value of A, this idea. So we look at sets. So here is our set S. Base set A. We have map F. For each A inside F, we have subset SA per image under A. So we have definable family of subsets of S. We know we can divide base A into finitely many definable sets. So that over each A0, all fibers are definably homeomorphic. But we can do better. So we say that such F is trivial if actually S looks like A cross F, where F is some definable set. So it's a definable trivialization. So it means our S is like fiber space over A is trivial. It's definably homeomorphic to A cross F. It looks like A cross F and pi is projection. So we know that, let's say, we can split A and achieve that all fibers are definably homeomorphic. But this one is like uniform homeomorphism. It acts on the whole family. And you say it's trivial over some subset of A, B. If taken pre-image, gives us trivial map F. And now, theorem, definable trivialization. So for definable continuous map F from SA, we can partition A definably into finitely many sets so that F is trivial over each AI. So after partitioning base into finitely many sets, our F is trivial. So let me leave this picture. So proof, we know we can divide base S, A, into finitely many subsets, so that over each subset, all fibers are definably homeomorphic. So we can partition A, and we can assume that actually over A, we have map into A cross F, pi. This map is called H. But it's not homeomorphism between S and A cross F. What it does, it maps homeomorphically each fiber onto F. It's a difference. You know all fibers are definably homeomorphic. They're all definably homeomorphic to some set F. So you can find H that maps each SA into A cross F. What we do. And now collect over all A's, so we map each fiber SA onto F. It's not homeomorphism between S and A cross F. It's just homeomorphism on each fiber. And now, so you want to partition the base A, so that on each pre-image of A1, the whole H is continuous. It's what gives us trivialization. Now, map is continuous. Definable map is continuous if and only if its graph is a is closed set. It's basic topology. So actually what we need is the following. We have all these maps HAs from each fiber onto F, and each such map is continuous. We need to show divide A, where the whole collection is continuous as a map. So we need to show just the following. Forget about this picture. We're now looking at graph of H. Take a definable set such that each fiber SX is closed. Then we can partition A into finitely many AIs, so that above each AI, the set is closed. So we have our set A, and we have set S over A. And for each A, the set SA is closed in the ambient set. So we want to divide A
into finitely many definable sets AI.
So if you look at our set S
above AI, this part
is closed in the ambient space. So from a closeness of fibers, we want to get closeness of the whole set, but after partition. Once you have this one, we have definable trivialization, which you can apply to the graph of our map. So you do it by induction on A. If dimension of A is zero, means A has only finitely many points, discrete set, the whole set S is going to be closed, consist of disjoint, somehow separated, closed, finitely many sets. It's a unit of finitely many closed sets. S is closed. Now, assume we have it for some n, go to higher dimension. So what is going wrong? If S is not closed, the closure of S minus S is not empty. This is a bad set we are trying to avoid. We want to S to be closed in the ambient space after partitioning the base. So let A prime be the very bad set in our base. Projection of the closure of S minus S. And if you take points outside of A prime, A0, A minus A prime, then above this set as zero, our set is going to be closed. Because this is our bad set, you take exactly elements outside of bad set into the projection. So outside of A prime, actually we have set is closed. So to argue by induction, so we pick A0 as one of our subsets. To argue by induction, we need to show that A prime has dimension strictly less than dimension of A. This is the game. So now assumption is, so A prime is projection of the bad set where S is not closed, and assume dimension of A prime equals the dimension of A. This is our basic assumption. And we are going to get a contradiction. Now let's take any point in A prime. Y point is in A prime because above A prime we have point in the closure of S minus A. For this point, there is some point alpha A which belongs to the closure of S but not in SA. Above A we have some points in the closure. It's a bad set. Now we can use definable choice and actually have such function to be definable. So alpha A for A in A prime, alpha of A picks points in the closure of S minus SA. Let's be a little bit careful. Minus S. Okay? You can pick such alpha A definably. Okay, here's our base A. And above each A prime, above each point A in A prime, we have point A alpha of A, which is not in the set S, but in its closure. You can do it everywhere. These are our points. Now each fiber is actually closed set SA. Each SA is closed. It means we can separate this point from SA by some open ball. So there is also definable function. By choice, we can pick radius of a ball. Oh, there's no gamma. So there is definable function by definable choice from A prime into R greater than zero, such that if you take open ball of radius gamma of A around this point, A alpha of A, intersection with SA equals zero. Definable choice. Plus SA is closed. Now, these functions are defined on the whole A prime. Dimension of A prime equals dimension of A. It means they have open set in the intersection. Since dimensions are the same, they have open set in the intersection. U is open in A. So our function gamma separates this point from our SA. Because every function is almost everywhere continuous, we can find such open set such that alpha and gamma are continuous. All definable functions are definably continuous almost everywhere. And now we have a contradiction. We have this continuous A alpha A, which is separated continuously, a continuous radius, from our fibers. And this point is at the closure of S. But we separated them from S. It's a contradiction. So it means A prime has tricky smaller dimension. Now we can apply induction hypothesis and divide A prime into finitely many definable sets. Over each set, our family is trivial, set S. So it gives us definable trivialization. And should be enough for today. My abstract is, was too optimistic. So tomorrow I'm going to do Hausdorff limits, definability of Hausdorff limits over the reals.